This documentary deals with content related to suicide. If you or someone you know on Vancouver Island is in crisis or needs help, you can call the Vancouver Island Crisis Line at 1-888-494-3888. In other areas, you can find your local crisis line number located next to 911 under emergency numbers listed in your local telephone directory. You are never alone. There are people who care about you and want to be there to support you. Welcome to Sleepy City. In late November 2014, I was walking home from downtown, and as I turned up my block, I stopped to look at the wall of Wildfire Bakery, which was covered in a new mural. To call it a mural is to do it an injustice. It was an explosion of color, love, and exuberance, and it was an expression of grief. A whimsical green landscape was populated with curious creatures, swirls of color, flags, plants, and phrases that invoked Zoe Cassidy, a young artist who had killed himself days before. Giant letters spelled out Shazam, which was his tag name. As I stood there, I thought about how my cousin had died by suicide several years ago. He, like Zoe, was a young man and creative. He also struggled hugely with mental illness. And I contrasted this very public expression of grief and community with the way we treat suicide and discussion around the topic in the media. When I was a reporter in a newsroom for a talk radio station for a few years, the rule was do not report on suicide to avoid the contagion effect, the possibility that someone would hear the reporting and be motivated to take their own life in the same way. However, the taboo created around that rule means there's an absence of intelligent and frank conversation about mental illness and suicide, a conversation I think could serve people who need help, either dealing with their own mental illness or supporting a loved one. So there I was looking at the beginnings of a conversation in fluorescent spray paint. I knew Zoe peripherally through friends, so after a few months, when it became possible to take the conversation from the mural to the airwaves, I began asking people to sit down and talk to me about Zoe, his life, art, and death. What emerged was a portrait of grief in a tight-knit community, a community that was open to talking about mental illness and how to support each other, but who often felt frustrated by a lack of information and resources available. Today, we're focusing on the people close to Zoe Cassidy. In the next episode, I'll be talking to people who deal with mental illness day to day about their experiences, good and bad, and possible ways forward. Katie Sage is the arts reporter for CFUV, and she's the Minister of Casual Living, an arts organization in Victoria. She'll start the episode off today.
Okay. Zoe and I met because he was crashing at the house that was directly behind mine. I'm pretty sure he was sleeping on the couch. I was hanging out in my backyard, so our backyards were touching. And yeah, he was just kind of like, hey, you there. And like, I'd be walking by and he, like, I think the first time I met him, he was on his skateboard and, you know, wearing bright clothes and introduces himself and
hello.
Immediately is kind of like a presence. I think he had kind of a little bit of a backstory on me. I think he'd heard about me from like other people that I hang out with. And I was just like, kind of like, what? Who are you? I don't know you. But I like people that are really outgoing and forward and who kind of like get in your face a little bit in a playful way, of course. So I immediately was kind of like, okay, like come over and have lunch with me. And, you know, he kind of like took to the kitchen and was like, oh, well, I'll just cook for you. And then he like started drawing all over things that were in my kitchen, like on little scrap pieces of paper and little things that my roommate had done, and he kind of like added to them. And it was kind of like, at first I was like, what are you doing? And then when I saw what he did, I actually thought like, wow, that's really great. And I actually have some of those little scraps still. Those like napkins and like, you know, recycling. He'd do these little characters or For instance, my roommate had done this little eye, and it was on a piece of cereal box with some like neon Bristol board, and then he put these like eyelashes on the eye, and then he wrote,
"Do you care?"
I mean, I still have that, and I thought, like, wow, that's really, like, interesting. Yeah, it was just, like, something that he didn't even really think about. You know, it's just funny that he just started drawing on something that was already art. He just was like, well, I know exactly what to do. And, I mean, if I wasn't who I was, I guess I probably would have been like, what the hell do you think you're doing? But I just admired it and kind of thought, like, this person's a little nuts. Okay, great.
Nick Vandergooten is a local artist and a friend of mine, and it was through him I'd met Zoe a handful of times.
I met Zoe in Toronto in 2008, 2006, somewhere around there, yeah, quite a while ago. And he was a little kid at the time. I think he was about 16. I was skating down the road. It was on Cecil Street near the Kensington Market. It was early spring, and there was this little kid who came skating down the road, and we waved at each other. And I was kind of lonely at the time, and so seeing him and smiling at him, you know, it was just really nice. And then I realized that he lived near me because I'd hear him skating and see him. And then we ended up, next time we passed, we hung out and skated for a bit, and he was just, I just can remember feeling like my loneliness just like go away because he was like a friend. Just a little whippersnapper, full of energy, you know, couldn't stop talking, colorful clothes, you know, just awesome. It was what I needed, you know. I was in my late mid-20s and going through a little bit of a rough spot, and he was like a breath of fresh air. And from then on in Toronto, for as long as I could stand him, I would hang out with him. And then his energy would get too much because he was just so much. He just, after a couple hours, you'd just be drained, or at least I was. But then the next day, I'd go looking for him or call him up or whatever, you know. So that's how I met him. And then it was a couple of years later that he showed up in Victoria, and then slowly started making forays back into the city in Victoria to get a place to live from his home base up in Swintula, at his mom's house.
Chai Tabreas met Zoe when he is 13. He's now 17. He talks here about the first time he met his friend. And his mom, Marcy Ross, talks a bit about Zoe as well.
I met Zoe just like through a wandering adventure around Victoria. We met in Brickyard Pizza. And I went there with Eric Volley and a good friend named Benita. And got pizza. And I saw that he was drawing something, so I'm like, what is he drawing? I go up to him, and I ask him if I could draw something. And so I do a little tag, and after that, he starts screaming my tag out in Brickyard Pizza, and doing siren noises, and just being like fun and like flamboyant. Then after that, we just kicked it. We tried to do it all. We tried to just tried to do everything, you know, as much as we could. Poetry, art, skateboarding, gardening, martial arts, whatever, wrestling, running around. We tried to do a bit of everything.
The very last time I saw him was Chai and I were doing this craft fair together in Vic West at the Y, and Chai was going to go actually over and see him. And then we ran into our friend Sam, and Sam was his roommate. And Sam's like, Marcy, Zoe's not doing well. And I was like, oh, he'll like bounce out of it. You know, it's just because he's been partying for months and months and months. And he's like, no, he's not coming out of his room, he's not talking, And then it really hit me, I was like, holy fuck. And so then I was like, I'll just message him on Facebook, and he responded on Facebook, and I was like, hey Zoe, do you want to go to Cashmere Cat? I know that Chai and him both really loved this DJ. He's like this amazing, magical DJ from Norway. And so I bought him a ticket, and I think I left it at his house. And then we're coming from different angles of the city, and so then we just met there. And we hung out and danced for a bit. It was, like, around Halloween. We're both pretty, like, in these insecure places. Like, I had just been coming out of a breakup, and I was totally wigged out being there because it was, like, a whole bunch of, like, 19 and 20-year-olds. And Zoe was wigged out because it was probably, like, so many people, and he had just been hiding away. So we were both kind of strange to each other. Yeah. And that was the last time I saw him. I don't know why I thought that, like, if we went and danced really hard, that he would come out of depression.
So the mural I mentioned at the beginning, Marcy, Chai, Mikhail Miller, and Eric Vollette painted it. You'll recognize Marcy and Chai's voices here, and you'll hear Mikhail's voice. I reached him by phone in Montreal, and Eric Vollette, who sat down with me in studio.
We're all hanging out at, like, a memorial service that was at the Ministry of Casual Living. And we just didn't want to be there anymore.
We were all pretty deflated, and, like, we just kind of gravitated towards Mikhail.
My friend Mikhail proposed that we do a mural.
Yeah, we were just watching people break down all around us. And I think we just kind of all looked at each other, and I was like, we should do something with this energy. And we were both just like,
let's go paint the bakery.
We should go to Wildfire. And then from there, like, we all just knew what to do. Like, Mikhail's like,
we had to go get some supplies.
They both wanted to spearhead just reacting to it right away and getting together and doing a mural in his spirit and in his style. So we tried to use his color palette and reference his style in doing that memorial piece.
Mikhail's like, okay, I'm gonna go get the rollers, I'm gonna go get the rolling paint, and he went off on his bike, and I was like, okay, I've got, like, I think I've got $80 here. And so then we all just, like, met up at the Wildfire.
It just needed to be done, and no better place than Wildfire to do it.
That's one of my best friends that owns Wildfire, and so she, she was just like, do whatever you guys want. And we just started painting, and it just kind of came together.
We all have painted before together, so it's just one person kind of mapped out the letters, and then other people outlined them, and then, yeah, it all kind of, like, came together.
He used a lot of fluorescent colors, and we would reference, like, a fox character that he would do a lot, and certain ways of doing tree and plant forms that he would do, these kind of minimalist trees.
And it was such a nice feeling to just, it felt weird painting like Zoe, like mimicking his painting, but it was also really nice to transcend that energy of, like, complete horrible sadness into something that was active. And
and we just tried to emulate as best we could the way he did them.
I think it was, like, part of a few people's, like, ways to cope with what happened.
I saw it help people. Yeah, like a lot of my friends for sure. Yeah, mm-hmm. Me as well, you know.
I think it was only up for 3 weeks before somebody went and threw paint on it after, but it was pretty amazing.
Zoe was a public person. Zoe, he was intensely personable, and when he was up, he was intensely interested in people. He knew everybody in town, and he was intensely creative, and he was encouraging always of that in others. He had enthusiasm of, like, 10 people. So I think it was a natural response, and I think artistic people really saw in him something to admire. What I noticed was this, like, really, really strong desire to emulate that very, very, which happened very quickly. It was like, I think that As far as the public outpouring, yeah, I mean, it's a good question. A lot of people commit suicide and there isn't that. But I think it was a reflection of the fact of what Zoe was and represented. And I think to people who didn't know him that well but only knew him as a character that they would see sometimes, he did kind of represent a spirit or an energy, that a lot of creative people do want to have more of. A lot of, like everybody else, you struggle to have inspiration in your daily life. And as an artist, you have to have more of it because you have to make so much out of this. You have to, it's all you who's creating it and you who's finding the reasons for it, you know. But Zoe seemed to have the opposite problem. He had too much. So his passing left a huge hole. I think that was an attempt and a hope that it was still there somehow.
I think that art in the public space has a lot of power to do good in society and for people. You could do something and then someone that you don't even know might, you know, gain something from it, and I think that's really awesome.
Public art and like unsanctioned kind of street art type public art has like this real like community communication aspect to it.
I remember when I first saw it, I was like, you know, going for a walk. I'm thinking too much. I'm just going to go for this walk down Quadra Street. And then, you know, I hit Wildfire and it was like the cosmic hobo Shazam, and I just like started bawling my eyes out, and like a bunch of the people who work at Wildfire came out and were just like, oh my god, I'm so sorry. And they're like, come in and have a coffee, it'll be okay. And then, you know, as soon as like I'm sitting in there, like a bunch of other people came in and, you know, join me, and, you know, we all kind of had a little Zoe gathering in the Wildfire while the mural was up, and that was really nice. You know, he's like, he'll always be a cosmic hobo.
Well, I've been carrying around this sticker since his memorial.
This is Kay Gallivan, who knew Zoe and some of his close friends. At his memorial, there were stickers made with his art and Shazam written on them. The intention was to put his name and his art up all over the city.
Or I think the stickers just said Shaz, and some of them were these little wolves that he painted everywhere. So it's an orange wolf and a blue wolf. I've been carrying it around because I don't know exactly where to stick it, I guess. It was sad for a lot of reasons. It was sad because most people didn't know he was so depressed. And I think that that spoke to a lot of people who have mental health issues that they keep secret. My brother committed suicide, and so it hit me in that way. It's really sad to see young men not be able to show that weakness until it's too late.
On Zoe's birthday this year, I went to meet his mother, Annie Cassidy, to talk. I met her in Banfield Park beside the Gorge Waterway. She was sitting with her partner and their golden retriever on a couple of blankets spread out over the yellow, drought-starved grass. She had decorated a tree next to the spot where we sat, and slowly a few people filtered over to spend time with her on a difficult day, a day in which she showed incredible strength.
Here we are here today, but it's Zoe's birthday. It would have been his 26th birthday, July 16th, 1989 he was born. And he lived just across the street here. This was his park. And he used to bring his canoe and paddle in. It could be like a countryman in the city. And he swam here religiously. He'd swim every morning, come over all winter even. Yeah, it's really just across the bridge to the city, on a bike and a foot even. And look at this. It's like
beautiful.
Yeah, it's a really special location. I can see that Zoe, he didn't fit in even in kindergarten. The kids saw that he was different and they didn't understand him. So it was awkward for him in life to find a place to fit. He had an incredible mind. he was reading university material at the age of 10. And it was just, so he didn't fit with his peers intellectually. He always wanted adult friends because he could have interesting discussion with them. You know, in cities like, we were in Toronto, we left when he was 7, there are schools, alternative schools for children who need different types of learning opportunities, which he would have done very well in, I think. So the school system didn't make much sense to him. He was constantly debating with the teachers, and he was often proving them wrong. And that wasn't so impressive to them, you know. But some people really loved him, too. They loved his mind. Zoe didn't do anything half-ass. He was full-on for whatever he took on, engaging with people or cycling or anything. He was interested in every person, every animal. Didn't matter age, color, position in society. None of that mattered at all. He had to engage to see what they were about and then push them to be more creative, be more out there, pushing. And it drove some people crazy. I felt like a superstar when I was with them. Yeah. This is my mom! This is my mom! It's just like really pretty cool. So it's kind of confusing when he kills himself. But it wasn't about me. That's what helps as time goes on for me to know that I think he felt that he had gone as high as he could go. He's tired. I think he thought that to see himself be really balanced would take a long time. And he had jobs and he was supporting himself. He was doing pretty well, you know, here. But it would come to a point where it's like, it didn't make sense anymore. And then he didn't have time to do art. And it just didn't fit into that stream of having to make money to pay your rent. It didn't. He was getting it, and he was getting very organized and more organized. But it just didn't make sense. He couldn't see a way how to fit.
Here's Katie Sage again. She curated two art shows for Zoe, one in the Ministry of Casual Living's window in Odeon Alley, and one in the Ministry's studio space. For that show, Zoe filled the space with paintings, sculpture, and a tiny sauna that kept the space incredibly hot for the show.
There was one piece in particular that, as a board, and as kind of me as a curator, I was like, oh gosh, Zoe, I don't know if you can actually put this in. He had two pieces, and one of them was a cigarette with a match. And I thought that, yeah, that's cheeky. And he framed it really nicely with a mat and everything. And then there was the second one underneath it was a little baggie of MDMA. And it said, try me. And I looked at it and I was like, no, it can't be. And I was like, oh, so you're a drug dealer for like your show? And because there's like a price tag on it and it's like framed really nicely with the mat on the wall. And I was just kind of like, whoa, you went there. Okay. I think it also kind of spoke to where he was at that point as well, because I'd seen him at parties and, you know, I think in order to kind of cope, he was escaping with a lot of drugs and alcohol, so I think it was kind of a little microcosm of where, like a portrait of where he was at that moment in time.
I think that we have a long way to go of really understanding mental illness in terms of suicide. And now my anger is just, why wasn't that there? You know, why wasn't there sort of like a thing, like the 10 things you do when your friend says something to you about suicide? You know, now that I'm saying that out loud, I think I should make a poster. But I think that because we didn't know this was coming, we erred on the side of not making it more difficult. It was maybe a feeling like if you brought it up or whatever, you stirred the pot, or I don't know. But, you know, now that he's gone, I have all these romantic hindsight things, like I should have picked him up and taken him home and told him that he's sleeping at my house for a couple of days or anything. But I didn't, because I didn't want to invade his sovereignty, his space, his sense of pride or being able to be self-sustaining. It was a big thing for Zoe. It was a few years where he'd been taking care of his own stuff, holding down a job, having this beautiful house, being able to, you know, and that was hard. That was hard fought for him. So there was a sense of not wanting to take that away from him or coddle him or whatever. He was certain he could handle his shit. And I wish that I had not done that. I wish that myself and others had said, who cares about his pride? You know, who cares about any of that? Like, let's just show up and, you know, do something about it. But Zoe went in and out of depression big time, seasonally. I think a lot of people get used to that, and they kind of just expect that he's going to pull through to the end, and sometimes they're not. So yeah, I wish that we would have, myself and others would have known, you know, I'll never make that mistake again. I'll always push through.
Here's Eric Vallette again, a friend of Zoe and one of the artists who created the mural.
Well, I'm bipolar myself, and so when I first was getting to know him, we sort of shared that in common, and I think that created a bond, because often he would press people's comfort zones and kind of just existing a bit beyond convention, or his energy level was hard for people to take sometimes, and I kind of saw my younger self in him. He's one of the few cats that kind of made me feel old, in that I remember behaving a lot like that, and maybe I've conceded to certain aspects of growing older, and I don't know, felt revitalized by the way he maybe hadn't, and I don't know, that could have been part of his struggle just with the day-to-day world too, in that he seem to enjoy pressing the margins of people's comfort zones, the world's comfort zones, and I don't think he conceded much or put the brakes on much for himself. So a lot of his strengths were, that people now appreciate retrospectively, were also kind of blockades maybe between him relating to other folks, I guess.
I wish I had spent more time with him. I was aware that he was going through a down period. I was studio mates with his roommate, so I was like, you know, kind of asking about him here and then, and you know, his roommate was trying his best to support Zoe. It's a tricky thing to address, you know, it's hard, and it's stigmatized in like depression and stuff. It's hard to talk about it. I think the male, you know, gender role is like not supposed to talk about your emotions or show weakness and all that stuff, so that even, you know, people that don't try not to fit into those stereotypical gender roles, we're still affected by those things.
It's really embarrassing to talk about mental illness. It just makes you completely vulnerable. Like, the thing I felt about Zoe was that he was always trying to keep himself up and just keep everyone else cheery and distract them, and kind of, he was like a magician. He was always like, look at this bright shiny thing over here, like, let's not talk about what's going on inside of me. There needs to be less shame around calling the crisis line. There's more systems that are out there. Like, the police now have a mental health unit. The crisis line, the people will come out and talk to you. They're like a team that'll come out. So there's lots of different avenues. It's just that there's so much shame attached to it. Like, I've called the crisis line many times this winter, especially when I was like dealing with Chai and my grief, and it was like it just like would skyrocket into like these really intense emotions, and it actually does calm you down. Like, it's not like necessarily getting to the root of the problem, but it does. It's so nice to have someone validate your feelings in the moment, and they are calm.
There was a really beautiful wheat paste done, and it was called The Original Sundance Kid, and it was a portrait of Zoe, and I think that people are, you know, bringing his image forward and keep it alive. Because he was, like, meant something. And I think a lot of people didn't get to tell him. I think a lot of artists struggle with mental health issues because it's, you know, we try to be awake and be conscious and concern ourselves with the weight of the world, and I think artists are really hyper aware of what the struggles are, and I think that some of the people who really want to keep his image alive because they're struggling too, and I think it's also just because he was really special.
Thanks for listening to Sleepy City. If you're looking for further reading, headsupguys.ca is a great resource for supporting someone or dealing with mental illness. Liam Casey wrote an incredible essay on reporting on suicide in the winter 2011 issue of the Ryerson Review of Journalism, and Moira Farr wrote a book called After Daniel about losing a loved one to suicide. The show is produced, edited, hosted by me, Liz MacArthur. In 2 weeks, I'll be back with another episode. See you then. Again, this documentary deals with content related to suicide, and if you or someone you know on Vancouver Island is in crisis or need help, you can call the Vancouver Island Crisis Line at 1-888-494-3888. In other areas, you can find your local crisis line number located next to 911 under emergency numbers listed in your local telephone directory. You are never alone. There are people who care about you and want to be there to support you.